everybody. We at PurpleRow.com would like to welcome everybody to the new and improved Purple Row Radio. This is the episode for Monday, February 21st, 2011. My name is Greg Stanwood. I am a writer, staff writer on PurpleRow.com, and joining me is my regular co-host, the editor-in-chief and manager of PurpleRow.com, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's good to be back. We've been gone for quite a while. We've been reformatting and redesigning what we're going to be doing with these podcasts this upcoming year. And I think we're pretty excited about some of the stuff we're going to be able to bring you now.
Yeah, that's absolutely a fact. I mean, do we want to go into features right now, or should we just launch into Rocky's talk?
Well, not to spend too much time on stuff that's not happening yet, but will be. We did get it figured out over the off season, if you will, that I will technically, from a hardware standpoint, be able to host guests and record them properly without spending an ungodly amount of extra money. So this year we'll finally be able to maybe bring in some other baseball writers from around the web and any other guests that may be of interest. So we don't have anybody today, but in the next couple weeks we'll probably start getting that figured out.
Yeah, we're hoping to get some interaction within the division, maybe some upcoming opponents, see what other, baseball minds there are around SB Nation, as well as other people, other bloggers and baseball writers on the internet who are, interested in joining into these these podcast recordings and...
These imitation phone calls.
Yeah, I guess they might be phone calling, and you know how Skype works.
Right. So, we'll be... taking care of all those things and hopefully bringing you some interesting perspectives other than our own over the upcoming season. And then also, we are I'll probably mention this again at the end just to remind everybody, but we are going to be hosting a few minutes at the end of each episode a little bit more reliably than we did last year regarding any topics or questions that you might want to suggest, that those of you listeners who are interested in contributing, you guys can suggest something for us to finish off the podcast with, and hopefully that'll turn into a regular segment, provided we get enough interest. So please, if you have anything you want us to opine about, let us know through email, through a comment section, anything like that, and we'll be happy to get to it. So let's spend a couple minutes here talking about the off season. We did two podcasts over the off season. This is our first one in 2011. So a lot has happened, but we don't want to dwell on it too long because I'm sure everybody's tired about hearing about, Michael Young and so forth. So that's the only time we will say his name on this podcast, I promise. What are your thoughts on the off season as a whole? Just quick sort of summary and how you think the team set itself up to go into this season.
Well, what the team really did, in my opinion, was just kind of solidify it. They feel like they have a good product, a good competitive product, provided health, and they essentially just took the time to lock the entire product in. There's a few acquisitions we saw. Jose Lopez from the Mariners, for example, traded for Chaz Rowe, a Triple-A pitcher, as well as Matt Lindstrom, who came from Houston, and in exchange it was
I almost said Paul Bargis, but no, he was the one who was sent to Minnesota for Jose Morales. It wasn't Ethan Hollingsworth either. was for Clay Mortensen.
All right, it was for Jonathan Aristill and Wes Music.
That's right. That's right. It was the two-player trade.
Silly us.
We had re-signed Aristill to a minor league contract. He declared free agency after the offseason, and we signed him back and then immediately traded him to Houston, which is interesting.
What they did is, like I said, they locked up the product on the field. So it's kind of, this is the team. We hope you like it because it's not going to change much over the next couple years.
And it's really not. I mean, looking at the contract status of all of our players, we have very few players on the 40-man roster who really look favorable to be gone after 2010. At the moment, of the 40 players, only one of them, in Jose Lopez, really projects to just, like, leave as a free agent in the standard way. He will gain enough service time over the year to declare. And then we have Aaron Cook, who technically has an option year for 2012. Do you know the number on that option year?
I'm not entirely sure. I believe it's another $10 million option. Let me see if I'm how close I am on that. But no, Cook is a good person to mention right there, just seeing how he's been kind of a staple of the Rockies team for the past, you know, however long here, since he came up in 2002 or 3, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just been for as in and out as he's been, based on injury, sickness, whatever, he's been pretty much just a standard Rockies player, for lack of a better word. You just expect to see him out there. The option on 2011...
No, on 2012.
Oh, no, 2012. $11 million mutual option or a $500,000 buyout.
Mm-hmm. And that's obviously, judging from where Cook is in his career and also where the terms of the money of $11 million, that's something that Cook is probably going to pick up by default. And so it's going to fall to the team to decide whether or not they want to do that. And, you know, it's real easy at this point to say it's going to be obvious that they turn that option down. But at the same time, if there's any concern about rotation depth for some reason, even though we really have a lot of it at this point, if they don't feel like there's a proper organizational candidate to fill that spot, the fact that we're not going to need to go hunting for more replacement players very much because nobody's going to be leaving – that room on the budget kind of opens a little bit. There's less pressure to be really conservative with money because we're not going to be losing much of it or gaining much of it in terms of new players or old players leaving. So freeing up $11 million from the budget, what would we really use to buy with that money, I guess, is what I'm trying to run over in my head here. The only really big hole in the main component of the team would be second base, assuming Jose Lopez keeps the job the entire year to begin with. And we've got candidates there to fill in for that after the year is over. So would you at this point agree that right now it probably looks like that option would be turned down, but it's not necessarily a necessity?
Well, I mean, nothing is for sure, but I mean, you take a look at Brandon Webb when he had his option. Wasn't it $6 million for that option there?
I have no idea.
Plus, the difference is that the Diamondbacks a couple years back were willing to take the risk. Actually, it might have been just last season. But the point is that they took the risk on Brandon Webb by picking up his option, thinking mm-hmm. that you know, if he can rebound, there's a decent chance that he's going to. That he's going to easily provide that value. It was actually an $8.5 million club option. So, the point is, you know, $8.5 million risking on whether or not Brandon Webb comes around. He didn't, so it was basically, you know, $8 million eaten. But
right.
that's the risk you take there with a potential front-of-the-line starter and arguably one of the better pitchers in baseball when he's completely healthy. Difference is that Aaron Cook just has not ever really been one of those top-flight pitchers.
Right.
I mean, best-case scenario, he's a solid mid-rotation starter. And we always kind of, you know, said he was a Coors Field-style ace because of his sinker-balling ways and such, but a lot of things have been falling off for him in the last couple seasons here. So, you know, I mean, he recognizes the problem and realizes that he needs to pitch better, and we'll just kind of have to see what happens from there. Either way, not worth $11 million next year. The only way he would have to seriously break out and put up some, you know, just ridiculous numbers relative to his career in order for the Rockets to even think about exercising that option.
And he has to hope that the depth behind him would also do something to reduce the confidence in their ability to take that rotation spot. Because right now we've got, you know, three or four candidates who could potentially jump into the rotation internally in 2012, which is just, you know, four more pieces of further incentive not to worry about committing that money.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, a lot of it's going to come down to, you know, what are the bargains are out there? Because for $11 million, you can get a decent starting pitcher for a season or two, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anyone off the top of my head except for maybe someone like John Garland or whoever, but I think he signed a 2 or 3 year deal with Los Angeles. I don't believe it was 1 year.
I think it was 2 years. But
the point stands. There's an innings eater out there somewhere you can pick up for less than $11 million on the free agent market, assuming that all of our own internal candidates aren't going to be here. But yeah, so simply put, there's a very good chance the Rockies are going to decline Aaron Cook's option.
It looks like Garland's contract is actually just 1 year, but it has a club option for 2012.
Gotcha. Well, so that, I mean, if he holds up his end of the bargain, there you go.
Yeah. So we've talked about Cook now. Let's go back to the other player I just brought up a couple minutes ago in Jose Lopez, because there's a lot of difference of opinion, if you will, from various fans of the Rockies right now about what we can expect from Jose Lopez. And I'm wondering if you have any insight on whether or not we should be expecting high because he is moving into an offensive park, and even if he's coming off a down year, there's no real reason to predict that he is going to fall on his face again in that manner, or are you thinking low that he's going to underperform, or do you just really not know?
Well, I mean, obviously there's no way to know. We can't. Uh-huh. We always like to hedge our bets by pretending, you know, we don't know or don't have a strong opinion, but I don't know. I mean, during the offseason when we first got him, I thought, oh good, we're getting Jose Lopez. He'll be a bench player. And then it became kind of more and more obvious that, no, he's probably going to be the starting second baseman. And then you kind of have to find a way to, you know, put a little shine on that, because there's got to be a reason. The organization doesn't just pick up a guy like, you know, just go trade for a guy just for the hell of it, you know? Not like Jazz Rowe is going to be that impact of a player or anything along those lines, but, you know, Jose Lopez has been terrible, was just awful last year.
Right. And
I mean, he's a couple years removed from, you know, two very decent seasons back to back, but.
And he's actually, he's still relatively young, too. He's not,
27.
Yeah, he started, I mean, he's already almost free agent eligible at that age. He started, he must have been 20 or 21 or so when he broke out. I was really interested in Jose Lopez for a few weeks there, but it was mostly, again, under the impression that we were looking for somebody with a relative amount of versatility to take over a lot of infield positions off the bench. And that was the role that I had really gained an interest in him from. But obviously, that, I mean, I guess we can't say completely that Jose Lopez is going to wind up with that job, but he's far and away the favorite for the job. Everyone in the organization is speaking like he's got the job. The only reason I say that we can't slot him in there 100% is that we just have so many young candidates who are really kind of a breakout away from maybe getting their name in there a little bit more strongly. And the fact that we're only going to have Jose Lopez around for 1 year, or at least projects to be. I mean, maybe if he goes off and has a, you know, has a roller coaster, I guess that's not the right term either, has a really fantastic majority of his time playing second base there, that he will be able to stake a claim for a look further on down in the next couple of years, but we can't count on that at this point, especially with the depth that we have up the middle infield. One name that people have been talking about, I mean, we've seen a couple of features on him written by a few of the beat writers over the past few days, is Hector Gomez. And I feel bad because I always forget about Hector Gomez. You know, everybody talks about Eric Young, Chris Nelson, and so forth because they have been able to get looks over the past couple of years. But, you know, we've talked about Gomez before on the show. Can't rule him out because of health. and people still really seem to consider him a top line prospect. So I guess the thing I'm wondering here is, from a depth perspective, Chris Nelson and Eric Young Jr. are running out of time to prove themselves, and we're probably not going to be keeping both of them, but where would this leave Hector Gomez?
Well, Gomez, really, his future's got to be in his own... Well, I want to say his future's going to be in his own hands here, but at the same time, it's not exactly like he plans to get hurt. Like, he, you know, just goes and does something stupid and gets hurt. I don't think that's the case we're dealing with at all. I mean, we're just talking sports injuries here. There's a lot of future for the guy if he can stay healthy and begin to finally put things together. We've seen a lot of talk about strong defensive range, about being a pretty decent bat, and especially playing shortstop. If he can make an adjustment, what I'm hearing is that if he plays a healthy year at shortstop, they'll start considering to move him over to second base or find another position for him, period.
Right.
With Nelson and Young, I mean, they're really going to have a strong breakout, or at least keep their heads above water where they are right now, strongly enough above water where the organization doesn't think about non-tendering them. But on the flip side of the coin, that they won't want to look elsewhere for a 1-year second baseman if Jose Lopez decides to leave for free agency. And this is assuming that Gomez is 2 years out. I mean,
right.
I'm basing this on very little besides, I don't know, he's been in professional baseball for a while now. If he can stay healthy, I wouldn't be surprised to see, him at least talking about the majors in 2 years. So, really, with Nelson, we just seen a full healthy season out of him. He showed some very good signs in AAA that he was looking to be ready. Eric Young's one of those anomalous players for me because, all the scouts and all the developmental people all the way up the line were saying, there's no way you're going to make it, there's no way you're going to make it. And yeah, I'm sure he has a little bit of help, but with his daddy being Eric Young Sr., the, first home run hit and Mile High and all that good stuff there, I'm sure that helped his situation with giving the organization a little extra patience with his son. But, at this point now, jumping levels is one thing, and then producing at levels isn't one thing. But when you get to the majors, I mean, you can't just say, this guy's a go-getter, because at some point, go-getter has to match up with plays baseball good. And what it looks like to me is he's a one-dimensional player who's not entirely sure what to do with the plate right now. He's fast and fast. And we saw that from Willie Taveras a couple years back, but the difference with Taveras is that he can actually field his position.
Mm-hmm. And there's no temptation to play Willie Taveras in unusual spots like there is with Eric Young.
How do you mean unusual spots, like left field?
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
In essence, I feel like it's not so much that I'm going to just put my foot down and rule out that Eric Young Jr. absolutely cannot never be an outfielder. People can play the outfield and, figure it out. They can. But at the same time, he came up as an infielder, and the outfield stuff is really kind of experimental to begin with. And I think that... some of that might lead back to the fact that the original Eric Young could also play the outfield. Eric Young 1.0. But, yeah. I don't want to sound like a broken record by complaining about Eric Young's outfield skills all the time, because a lot of people do that. And, I can think of worse options in the outfield than Eric Young. Even if he doesn't really have any defensive form really figured out yet, at least he can get to the ball, which is better than having an outfielder that can't even do that. And there are some of them. But, I feel like when it comes to a player like Young, they're going to try to find a way to keep him around in some capacity. I think that, he's got one more year where he can pass to and from AAA whenever they want him to. And then after that, they might try to find a spot for him on the bench. And if that means having him this year down in the minors play more outfield or something, I can't put it past them that they're going to treat him a little bit more like an actual utility player, which is something that he's never really been before. That's why a player like Jonathan Herrera has a better chance of making the team this year, because he can play more positions and has spent his whole career playing those positions. So it's tough to tell what they're going to do with Young, but I think that in terms of projecting him as a starting second baseman, there's going to have to be some pretty big steps that are taken this year by him in order for him to keep his name on that consideration list, particularly with a couple of other players there with perhaps a little bit more upside than with Eric Young. So I think that's really the way that shakes up for me. He's definitely a player, speaking of Eric Young, he's a player to keep your eye on in the minors this year, assuming he doesn't make the team. He's a long shot for the 25th spot, but like you said, he's kind of a one-dimensional player at this point. And even though someone like Jason Giambi is also a one-dimensional player, having left-handed power in the late game, you know, 7th through 9th inning, is probably more important to the team right now than having speed off the bench. So it doesn't look good for Young to make the team at this point.
No, I mean, he'll really just be kind of an injury replacement at this point. I mean, barring injury or whatever in AAA, yeah, I don't know. It'd be a shame to see a guy with that kind of speed go, but, you know, speed only, you can't steal first, as we all like to point out.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't pay super close attention to a lot of the players like Eric Young who put up numbers of one sort or another in the majors, but, you know, other than last September, Eric Young has never really had regular major league playing time. He's been up and about, and when he's up, he's not usually starting, or hadn't been until they benched Barmas. So, you know, I don't really have a sense of what is the problem with Young's offensive game. I know that people are not impressed with it at this point, but could you highlight maybe what his biggest weaknesses are in that department?
We could talk about strikeouts for starters. You know, no one likes to see strikeouts from a guy with that kind of speed. He's it's like in the movie Major League, where if you're swinging for the fences with that kind of speed and not that kind of power, then you're going to seriously be you know, missing the biggest aspect of your game. Hit the ball on the ground, go to, get to first, steal second, and go from there.
So does he just have a high strikeout rate in general?
Well, that's what we're looking at right now here. Bless it. I hate it how when you look up Eric Young Jr.,
it always takes you to Eric Young first.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I don't want to look at his daddy. He may be stunting like his daddy if his bat music is anything to speak of, but no, 18.6 strikeout percentage is way too much for a guy who we expect to be a slappy, bunty, infield, single kind of guy.
Right.
He didn't really field well last year. He didn't hit the ball well. He batted .244, didn't walk as well as he usually does. Well, for his major league numbers, it was actually the best of his major league career, but he's always been much stronger in the minors, and his strikeout numbers are always a bit lower in the minors as well. But
and, I mean, in general, we can't really draw conclusions about his major league time because there's been so little of it.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have a career yet. he's got a couple spoonfuls.
Pretty much. That's pretty much what it comes down to. I mean, he's not getting the bat on the ball. He's walking an okay amount. We never expect him to hit for power. I mean, maybe a few doubles or whatever. But it's, I don't know, it's almost like they need to just kind of keep remolding him every level he gets to see what he can do with his, you know, how he can incorporate this one tool into the game of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. That's with a guy with those kind of offensive problems. I mean, to stand a major league roster, you're going to need to have an elite glove, and without an elite glove and with offensive struggles, you're just not a viable major leaguer. And I hate to say it like that, but that's just what it is.
So as we prepare for going forward into the heart of spring training, I mean, we're looking at early this week the position player workouts beginning, and then we have our first game. Oh my, we have our I didn't really think about this. The first game of spring training is before our next podcast. That's how close it is. We're 6 days away from the first actual spring training game. So I guess what I want to shift the discussion topic here towards is, are there any, I mean, we obviously have kind of a projected idea of what our team is going to look like come April 1st. Who around camp, whether they're an NRI or a minor leaguer, are you personally going to be watching the closest? Not necessarily because they have a really good chance of making the team, because for once the team really kind of looks rather stable, you know, discounting any potential injuries or trades or whatever. Who interests you in getting a chance to take a look at for present or future consideration?
Well, Lopez is obviously my first choice. Well, not obviously. There's nothing obvious about it, but Lopez would be my first choice here, even though he's 99% of lock to make the Major League roster. Coming out of Safeco and joining a new team that he's excited about playing for and so on and so forth, he seems like a very intriguing case. You had a line drive hitter who never strikes out, but also just hasn't put up good offensive numbers, but he's also a right-handed pull hitter and that kind of hitter gets just absolutely destroyed in Safeco Field. Granted, we're only going to see what the Arizona Fall, or not Arizona Fall League, but the Cactus League is able to provide for him as far as, you know, opportunity to play and opportunity to get a look at his skill sets there. And we won't really get to see the fruition until Coors Field on April 1st, but I don't know. I think it'd be nice to actually see a decent season out of a second baseman that we haven't really seen one since 2007, and even then it was, you know, decent.
What about players who are a little bit less likely, perhaps, to be considered for an actual roster spot? Maybe somebody who is a non-roster invitee or some such.
Well, I like the looks of both John Main and Cole Garner, you know, for different reasons. Garner, just because we've kind of, you know, I don't think jerked around is the right word for it, because, I mean, it's AAA. Everyone kind of gets jerked around a little bit when it comes to getting to the majors, and he's not really a top-flight prospect, but we saw a lot of good stuff out of him last year in spring training. They had a really solid season in AAA Colorado Springs, but now with the advent of Ty Wigginton and Johnny Herrera filling up a lot of utility spot on the Major League roster, they were able to make room for Jason Giambi as a 25th man, which kind of leaves Cole Garner either down in AAA or off in free agency somewhere. And, you know, he would be a decent look for the fifth outfield slot that most teams tend to carry, but considering that we're looking at Wigginton to play the corners, or maybe even just one corner, and then after that you have Dexter Fowler and Carlos Gonzalez, who can both play center, and then Spilly Smith, who will be looked at as, you know, corner players as well, there's just no need to have Garner. He's kind of a extraneous player in that regard.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, traditional roster construction theory, if such a thing exists, would tell you that having a standard fifth outfielder is probably a good idea. But at the same time, you know, nobody really wants to see Ty Wigginton play in the outfield all the time. But I would agree that, and also argue that, he doesn't really have to. I mean, with the four that we have, you know, all four of them can technically play all three spots. We're not going to be seeing Seth Smith in center very much, if at all. But
no,
that
sounds like a terrible idea.
Well, he's played center before. He played center in 2008 a few times. Point being, it's not really a constraint for any of the four players to be shuffled about in the outfield if necessary. We don't need to go playing Wigginton in left field three times a week, because our outfield, even if Seth Smith gets a little shaky and has to be platooned or something similar, it can be relatively stable with the versatility of the players that we have out there. So I agree that worrying about not having a true fifth outfielder is not too much of a problem. It would become a problem if we see Wigginton playing there too much. Now, in regards to Garner, I agree that jerked around isn't quite the right word, but we waited a long time to commit to him. You know, this was his, he already spent his 7-year contract with the Rockies. He, then left via free agency and signed back with us again last year. And finally, he got purchased onto the roster after the season last year to prevent him from declaring free agency again. So that at least says, you know, we're going to collect some of our outfield depth. They chose him over Matt Miller, which makes sense. And at this point, you know, he's now, even already several years into a minor league career, he's just now beginning the process of trying to fight for a spot in the major league roster. And since he's on the 40-man now, he can't leave unless we let him. So he can enter into the regular sort of up and down type position there and see where it goes. And maybe if it looks less and less like he's going to find an opening into the team over the next couple of years, then maybe they'll go ahead and let him go and see what other opportunities they can bring him. Let's see. I was thinking of something else, but we're at 30 minutes now, and we don't want to be going too long, especially not on our first show. So are there any other things that you want to bring up before we take off?
Well, not particularly. All we've seen so far this spring is your typical spring poof. You know, the big players arrive, the rehashes of the offseason, kind of like we just did there.
Everybody's in the best shape of their career.
They've gained or lost 10, 15 pounds, body fat percentages, look how much faster they are, look at their haircut, just, you know, silly stuff like that. I mean, nothing going on right now is that monumental.
It's really only just beginning. We have a lot more to go before the season, and obviously a lot of season. So it's only speculation at this point. There's nothing set in stone besides, you know, the fact that there's going to be baseball. So
it's a glorious thing to know that baseball is, you know, it's coming back. It's like the spring thaw. Aslan has returned, and the White Witch's hold on Narnia is falling. And I guess I think of the White Witch as being, I don't know, other
winter.
I was going to go with the NFL, but, you know, whatever.
I would agree that that would be an appropriate metaphor there as well. I remember what I was going to ask. What are your first impressions on the new facility?
Everything that I've seen right there, everything just looks sharp from the pictures that we've seen from Rank and then Harding and everyone else. And Armstrong, I think, sent up a few as well. Yep. Everything just looks sharp, crisp, clean, new, just awesome and exciting. Just things done very uniquely that, you know, kind of create a exciting new way for the players to kind of get ready for the season. It's not just, oh, here's your workout room, enjoy yourself. It's, you know, it's all the open air workout room that looks out over the field and stuff.
Yeah.
Just a lot of cool stuff. And from everything you hear in the players saying too, I mean, they are just thrilled with what they've been presented with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a happy team coming to spring training, who knows? Maybe that will make for a, you know, better kickoff to the 2011 season.
Yeah, going off that note, one other thing that I think we should bring up just really quickly here is the more lax and less intensive attitude that is being put on by the staff this season because of a worry that players are going to be inclined to overwork, which happened in a few cases last year. They're really taking a deliberate approach. They don't want to overwork anybody. And I recall reading that normally at this point in spring, they have timed pitching workouts where they'll throw for so-and-so amount of time. But what they're doing instead is having a pitch count limit instead. So there's less, hopefully less chance of something happening to like what happened with Houston Street last year, who showed up ready to go, said, I wanna pitch my best and hardest from the get-go, and then found himself on the disabled list for, you know, a third of the season because, he worked himself too hard, even though he was perfectly fine going in. It was a little different with Betancourt because he'd had some rocky off-season, issues, like he got sick a few times and so forth. But those are the two real, big examples of, you know, what happened last year that they're trying to avoid. So I think that's a rather important philosophy. And even though in 2008, when they did the same thing with the offense, it made me really mad. I think that, this is probably a better, place for that sort of approach to be taken.
Well, I kind of wonder about some of it. I think Street is just a relatively fragile body, which is too bad because he's an incredibly talented pitcher. But, I mean, I don't know. People have been playing baseball for 100 years, and I don't know. I think it's hard to make too many generalities based off a couple players, you know, their spring trainings. I mean, look at, you know, Tulitz and Gonzalez worked as hard as they worked, and they had great seasons, and Todd Helton worked as hard as he worked and was, you know, terrible this season and had back injuries again.
Are you worried then that perhaps this may work against a couple of our pitchers in the same sense that the other mentality worked against pitchers last year?
Yeah, potentially. I don't think it's necessarily, I think it has to really be a case-by-case basis. I obviously don't want to see overwork in spring training. That's just silly, but I also don't want to, you know, see guys underworked or, you know,
not ready to go come the time that they have to be to perform for real. Yeah.
Well, it's the same kind of thing that's brought up when people try to argue against pitch counts, that not every pitcher has a magical 100 pitch, you know, limit where they suddenly become ineffective or become more of an injury risk or whatever, but it's just kind of the baseline. So people go with it. I mean, it would be a credit to the team to see what they're able, what they do with each individual player and how they set up their workout regime.
Mm.
A regimen, I should say.
Yeah, so, workout regime.
Yes.
Okay, so, that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about the idea of having an actual assessment of, you know, who is probably going to respond better to this sort of spring development or that sort. I don't really know how easy that would be to enforce simply because, you know, they do at this point almost all of their workouts together. They do stuff separately, I know, because I know that players have been kind of cycling through different stations or whatever and so forth. I don't really have, obviously, a super fantastic picture of how it works, but everything we see, you know, in pictures or video or whatever, it seems like they're usually kind of all grouped together doing the same thing most of the time. But I'm sure that players that need it are receiving the special attention that they're supposed to. I know that Lindstrom is doing some unusual stuff already. They're teaching him some new pitches or something. A new changeup, maybe? I can't really remember what it was. But anyway, that's pretty much where the season is. We are just starting, and there's not a lot to be said in terms of anything set in stone. But at this point, all we're doing is looking forward. So as the weeks go by, we'll have a lot more specific things to talk about rather than just kind of where we're feeling individually about where the team is going. So right now, the show is still going to be weekly. So we'll be back next week, next Monday, with another show. The first spring training game of the season is on Saturday the 26th. I believe it is at 1 o'clock, and it is going to be televised on FSN, as far as I understand. So again, to remind everybody, if you want to hear us talk about anything specifically, things that we don't come up with on our own or just ramble about, drop us a line, send an email, put a comment, anything that you want to hear us rant about or opine about or whatever. We'll take pretty much anything. So, anything else?
That's about all I got for right now. We'd love to hear what other people think of the podcast in general, what we could general feedback. If you want to find the podcast online without going through Purple Row or for whatever reason, you can check out purplerowradio.com, and you can email us at purplerowradio@gmail.com.
And yeah, and don't let that suggest that you shouldn't check out Purple Row as well.
Precisely.
We know that a lot of our listenership is going to be from the website, but we also know that we find our way out to other people as well, and we'd love to see other people check out the blog. It's a pretty great place, good community. There's a lot of interesting information. As time has gone by, there's certainly been a lot more growth in terms of sort of differing opinions and that sort of thing. So it's an interesting place to come and check out some new features and ideas that haven't been really making their way around anywhere else. So take a look at purplerow.com, or if you just want to go back and listen to the podcasts, or for some reason, if you want to go back and listen to all our old ones from last year, those are also available at purplerowradio.com. I think that pretty much covers it, and we will be back on Monday the 28th with hopefully a bit more perspective, but being that we're still just going to be right at the start, we might not have anything that concrete to talk about yet. So send us questions, comments, thoughts, and we'll get back to you. So on behalf of myself and Andrew, we'll see you next week. Take care.